julas tilbud hos Spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribber fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alt I tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.
Hei dere, velkommen til oss. Vi Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Vi to jenter bak rattet, dette Monica.
Og dette Alette. Vi biohacking-kollegaer og legger sammen våre erfaringer og kunnskap for å inspirere deg til å ta fatt på biohacking for å optimalisere helsen din.
Vi følger med og setter forstørrelsesglass på trender og siste forskning og snakker med verdens toppeksperter innen trening, life coaching, helse og biohacking.
Du klar for å starte med konkrete hacks, lytte til din egen kropp og ta fatt på din helsemessige reise sammen med oss?
Vi ønsker naturlig tilnærming til helsen vår, og vi snakker til både menn og kvinner.
Du kan gjerne gi tilbakemeldinger til oss under podcasten her, og slå gjerne til med en god stjerne.
Du finner oss også på Instagram og Facebook. Du klar? Velkommen!
Forrige uke snakket vi med Steven Hussey om hjertet. Hvordan det fungerer når hjertelidelser faktisk oppstod, når man mest utsatt for disse sykdommene og alle disse mytene rundt fett.
Ja, vi snakket også om kolesterolet og særlig hva høyt LDL-nivå betyr, og hvilke konsekvenser statiner har og hva man skal tenke på. Dagens episode I denne miniserien fortsetter å handle om hjertet, men denne uken skal vi gå inn på HRV, hjertevariabiliteten knyttet opp mot hjertehelse.
Ja, vi vil snakke litt om livsstilsendringer, om dette forferdelige stresset og miljøpåvirkninger, og ikke minst gode tiltak du kan gjøre for å optimalisere din egen hjertehelse. Velkommen til Biohacking Girls podcast og del 2 av denne serien med Dr. Steven Hussey.
Welcome back to the show, Steven Hussey. There's so much information and topics to understand while discussing heart health. And this week we will talk about stress and solutions. How about that, Steven?
That sounds perfect. Let's do it.
Yes. So HRV is becoming more and more popular to monitor these days. We check in these numbers daily. How can HRV, heart rate variation, help us understand the health of our heart?
Yeah. So, I mean, heart rate variability is the time interval between heartbeats, and it's supposed to be variation, but I like to describe it as something else called respiratory sinus arrhythmia. And so basically what that is, like if someone, you know, was to look, you know, like they find their pulse on their wrist, you know, on the thumb side of the wrist, and you find your pulse and you take a breath in, then you'll feel your heartbeat quicken a little bit. It'll go a little bit faster. And if you slowly breathe out, the pulse will slow a little bit. And that's like the difference between the fastest it gets when you breathe in and the slowest it gets when you breathe out is called your respiratory sinus arrhythmia. And it's measuring the same thing as heart rate variability. It's measuring your ability to adapt to a stress. So if the fastest it gets when you breathe in and the slowest it gets when you breathe out is a very narrow window, then you're not adapting to stress very well. You don't have the ability to go back and forth between a stress and a non-stress state. But if you have a bigger window and it gets faster and slower from breathing in to breathing out, then your body, that's showing your body has an ability to go back and forth readily and healthily between a stress and a non-stress state. And so that's what heart rate variability is, kind of described through respiratory sinus arrhythmia. And so the reason that this is important is because we're designed or evolved to have a stress response and come back to normal. And so if we get into a situation where we are constantly but incorrectly thinking that we're in a stress state or in a stressful situation, our body will respond accordingly. And so that's an issue in the modern day because we humans have very big brains, and those big brains have gotten us very far. They've done a lot of wonderful things for us. However, they have also allowed us to overanalyze a bit, and so we can't really shut them down. We can have something stressful happen to us, and instead of adapting to it and going back to normal, we can think about it and overthink it for days or weeks afterwards. We can see something stressful happen to somebody else across the world on the news and fear that it's going to happen to us, or be in distress about it, even though it's not happening to us. Just feel bad for those people. And I'm not saying we shouldn't feel bad for people. I'm just saying that we're not evolved to handle that amount of weight on our shoulders. We are evolved to be in like 100 to 150 members of a tribe and deal with that community pretty much. And so the weight of this modern world can be very stressful to us. And that can drive us into an imbalance in the autonomic nervous system, where we get too much of stress signaling and not enough non-stress signaling. And so the stress signaling is supposed to be reserved for those times when you need to get away from stress. And the non-stress signaling is reserved for those times when it's time to relax and eat and digest and whatever, you know, sleep. And so if we let the modern world get to us and we are incorrectly thinking that we're in a stress state all the time, our body gets used to being in that state and it almost shuts down the non-stress signaling. They're supposed to be balanced. It's never like we're in one or the other. They're supposed to always be both signaling and balancing each other out. It's very much like when we are metabolically unhealthy. We are too used to burning glucose and our body almost shuts down and forgets how to burn fatty acids and ketones, which is why when you go on a lower carb diet, you have this keto flu because your body is trying to re-upregulate those mechanisms that tell it to burn fat. So same kind of thing here. When we get this imbalance in the stress response, that leaves us very vulnerable to acute stresses. Because if we don't have this non-stress signaling balancing out the stress signaling, and we have an acute stressor, like, you know, something terrible that happens, or you know, we find out we got fired from at work or something like that, then those things can trigger bad things happening. And I talk about how that can trigger specifically what I call metabolic heart attacks in my book. But even if it's not an acute situation, if we have this downregulation of the non-stress response over time, and low heart variability would be the thing that would measure that. If we do that over time, then our body is always thinking that we're under stress. And so it's never reserving time for sleeping or eating or procreating or detoxification or those types of things. And so in people who have this imbalanced stress response or low heart rate variability, lots of times we can see things like poor digestion, or we can see like insomnia or sexual dysfunction or detoxification issues and liver stress and things like that. And so how we're perceiving the world in our emotional state, it's very, very important when it comes to disease. And there's all this talk about diet and exercise, and those are very important things to pay attention to. But it's, I think, more important to pay attention to your emotional state. And there are studies out there that show that what you're thinking emotionally will affect, you know, how your cells work and what they're expressing, you know. And there's this emotional connection we have with our hearts. And I think there's no mistake in that. We say things like, I love you with all my heart. We don't say, I love you with all my elbow. You know, maybe some people do, I don't know, but we say things like, I gave it all my heart, you know, like when we're trying hard to do something and we tried our best, you know, we put all our emotion into it and we use our heart as the organ to say that. And it's because I think the heart is kind of like this sixth sense organ that's detecting our emotional state and relaying that to our body so we have the appropriate stress response. So if we're emotionally distressed, for whatever reason, our heart is measuring that. And that's why we measure that distress through heart rate variability. There's actually nerves that go from the heart directly to the muscles of facial expression, because how our heart is feeling, our face is expressing. And so it's just really, really fascinating. And people might say, oh, it's like woo-woo and everything. But if you look at the studies on heart rate variability and disease, and I'm not just talking about heart disease, I'm talking about all disease. If heart rate variability is not as robust, is not as not as healthy, then we're going to see a lot of issues with chronic disease. And it's because we are emotional beings. You know, we evolved to be social. And if we have bad emotions, that's going to reflect in our health. And if we have good emotions and are expressing gratitude and love, then we're going to see a different outcome.
It's interesting. Sometimes we even cause that stress on ourselves, just thinking, like in your book, Understanding the Heart, the situation when the last trip you had in Europe, when you had a taxi trip to the hotel. Can you tell? You caused immense kind of stress on yourself, just thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the type of thing, you know, this story is the type of thing that happens on a day-to-day basis for a lot of people. And so like, I'm going to tell this one story, but it's not like that's just one thing that happened to me. You know, this can happen over and over again. And that's what leads to the imbalance. Your body gets used to being in that state and forgets how the other state. But yeah, I flew into Turkey. And it was at the end of our trip. And so I had a budget of how much I wanted to spend on the trip. So we were getting toward that budget. And so I wanted to spend as little as I could on this trip, or this last little stop we were making. And so, we got into the taxi and, you know, I didn't know, you know, the currency or whatever, because, you know, I knew Euro was in Europe, but we were getting to the edge of Europe. So I was like, I don't know what type of currency they use. And so we get into the taxi. And we were trying to figure out public transportation, but we couldn't figure it out, or too much, and we were tired, so we were like, let's just get a taxi. And so we got a taxi, and I'm sitting there in the passenger seat, and I'm just watching the little meter, and it just goes up and up and up, and it's like 10 and 20 and 30 and 40, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. I'm on my phone, like, how far is the hotel? Oh my gosh, this is getting crazy. I was like, and then it got to like 100 or something. I can't remember the exact numbers, but I was like, okay, we're not going to be able to go see anything, or can't spend any money while we're here for these 2 days. And so I get to the hotel. It's like, I don't remember, some number that was way more than I wanted to spend in euro. And so I hand the cab driver gets out, puts her bags down or whatever. And I hand the guy whatever amount that it was in euro. And he looked at me confused, but he didn't speak English. So I was just trying to say, like, I was like, well, how much is it? Whatever. And then the guy from the hotel, the concierge, came out and he saw that we had these confused looks on our faces. And he was like, what's going on? The driver told him like whatever he told him. And the guy was like, oh, this is way too much. You have any smaller bills? And I was like, what are you talking about? And I pointed to the cab and I was like, this is the amount. And he was like, no, it's in Turkish money, which I think is lira, I guess, yeah. I think. And I was like, oh, well, how much is that? And he was like, 10 euro or something. And I was like, oh. And I was thinking it was going to be, but I was getting like mad and worried, and it was affecting like my ability. Like, I don't even remember, you know, I remember like I was letting everything there, because like Turkey, Istanbul, like there was all these nice hotels and this nice highway, and we were in this nice cab. And I was like, man, this is such an expensive country. And I was letting all these things that I had no evidence that they were true get to me, you know, and I kind of thought my way into the stress response with all these ideas, and that was not the case at all.
And the physical response on your body is still the same.
And I tell people all the time that, you know, the sounds of like if you're walking in downtown New York and all the sounds of the construction and the car horns and whatever else you hear, like, our minds are smart enough to override, and we say, oh, well, I'm not in danger, right? But our body is still having a physiological response of those noises that are not natural to us. It's still having a stressful response to them. Less so because our brain gets to override them a little bit, but it's still stressful to us. And so we're surrounding ourselves with those types of things. And so then, you know, if we do that day in and day out, our body gets used to being in this stress state, and it kind of stays in that stress state. And that interferes with our ability to handle stress and go back to homeostasis. We get stuck in the stress state, and that's when we get low heart rate variability, you know, suggesting that there's low adaptation that damages the heart, and I think is the driver behind angina, which is chest pain, you know, because when the heart is being forced to burn more glucose than it wants to in a stress state, which is what happens in a stress state, that can create a situation that causes, you know, too much burning of glucose that causes increase in lactic acid and hydrogen ions, which can cause pain in that muscle. Just like when you go for a run, the muscle in your leg, that's a stress state. You start burning glucose, you get lactic acid buildup with hydrogen ions, and that causes pain, right? This just burning pain. The same thing happens in the heart muscle when we're under stress. So
yeah, we will continue to monitor our HRV, that's for sure. Yeah, and it's fun, actually. And to see how everything affects us, I've learned so much, and so have you. Yeah.
But I think it's really important to discuss a little bit how we can support the health of the heart.
Yes.
And find good ways.
Yeah. And in the last episode we had with you, you talked about your morning routine. And can you share with us some good tips to start the morning off on our right foot so we don't get so stressed?
Yeah. And one thing I think I should say first is how we interpret that number of heart rate variability. Like, so they say anywhere from 20 to 100 is normal, and you never want to compare yours to anybody else's. You want to find a device that can help you measure heart rate variability. There's lots of them out there. And you get your baseline number, which may take a week or so to get, just to kind of see what you stay at. And then you just work to do things to improve it from there. It's not a competition with anybody else. It's just, this is my heart rate variability. If I do this, I see it go up a little bit. Oh, great. I'll do more of that. You know, if I'm really stressed and doing this, it goes down. Okay, I should try and avoid that or whatever. So yeah. And so
really,
what are
point.
Those things? Yeah. So what are those things that have been shown to increase heart rate variability and increase our adaptability to stress? Well, one, I mean, there's the obvious ones. Well, maybe they're not obvious to everybody, but they're like, you know, meditation or prayer, whatever it is for you that you do, some kind of sense of something bigger than yourself is important, I think. Time in nature, sunlight, I'd say a good circadian rhythm. So trying to, as much as you can, link up your awake hours to, you know, the light and the sun, being exposed to the sun, and then minimizing artificial light at night, those types of things. Grounding, being in direct contact with earth, cold exposure, even just hot cold therapy. You know, it's why I do the infrared sauna, and then I go straight to a cold shower. And it's pretty cold shower this time of year. It's cold out. But yeah, those types of things. You know, just being in contact with the environment, or creating an environment within the modern world that's more like the environment that humans were in for a very, very long time. Those types of things are important. But then there's also things like stranger ones that are more like hacking, you know, like, you know, stimulating the gag reflex. It stimulates the vagus nerve, which communicates this signal, things like that, or splashing cold water on your face, or things like that. But then I think very importantly is when it comes to stressors in your life, you know, there's always going to be stressors. That's just life. You're not going to be able to get rid of all of them. But the research shows that the stresses that make us feel like we're out of control or are in unpredictable situations are the most detrimental to our health. So if you have stresses in your life that you can mitigate, stresses that make you feel out of control or in unpredictable situations, then those are the ones you want to try and get rid of first. Because you may feel that your job is stressful, but it may be a very secure job, and it's a good type of stress. It's a kind of high demand job, but it's not stressful. Let's say you have, you're financially stable and you have good job security. Like, those are great. If you don't have those things, and then those are things that make you feel like your life is unpredictable. You don't know if you're going to lose your job. You don't know how much you're going to get paid or whatever. Those are the stresses that are more detrimental to our health. And those are the ones we should look to mitigate first. But like I said, there's always going to be stresses. So that's why I think like some kind of mindfulness activity is very important. Like, change your perception of stress, because, you know, it's not always the end of the world if something bad happens. You know, like, if, I mean, smaller things, like, I know people who get cut off in traffic and just are irate, you know, and they can't let it go. It's just like, that's not a healthy response. And you've got to find more peace with that thing that happened. You know, so because that's having a very negative impact on your health. So yeah, it's lots of different things like that. And there's so many. I mean, just even like a low carb diet has been shown to increase heart rate variability, or chiropractic, or, I mean, there's so many things. But it's really about putting your body in this environment that it's more compatible with. You know, decreasing electromagnetic field exposure, like, all these different things have been shown to improve heart rate variability.
Vi bryter inn for å fortelle hvordan det går med vårt supre samarbeid med Oslo Skin Lab og kollagenpulveret The Solution. Vi har brukt kollagenet nå i 12 uker uten pause, og kan endelig dele resultater på den andre hudskanningen vi har gjort.
Vi må si at vi tok første scan, så sa Maybritt på Oslo Hudpleieklinikk at vi begge hadde et veldig godt utgangspunkt, og at vi kanskje ikke kunne vente revolusjonerende resultater sånn med en gang.
The Solution er et kollagenpulver som kommer i porsjonspakker, hvor du tar en om dagen. Det er veldig enkelt, og vår favoritt er å bare blande denne i kaffen. Helt smakløst, og en pose er en dags porsjon.
The Solution er hydrolysert kollagen, altså kollagen som er brutt ned til en helt bestemt peptidlengde. Hydrolysering ser ut til å være det som må til for å få effekt på hudens glatthet og spenst. Kollagenpeptidene i The Solution er spesialdesignet til å fungere på hud, og minimerer linjer og rynker, øker spenst og reduserer cellulitter.
Som biohackere valgte vi nettopp The Solution kollagenpulver fordi det god forskning på at dette faktisk hjelper på fine linjer og elastitet i huden. Det lærerikt å jobbe med Oslo Skin Lab, og de har vært veldig flinke til å svare på alle våre nerdete spørsmål om dette pulveret.
Så til resultatene på hudskanningen. Vi får vel si at vi er rimelig fornøyde, Monica?
Ja, når det kommer til rynker rundt øynene, så ble det målt 6% færre rynker etter disse 12 ukene, og fasthet og tetthet var det 10% bedring.
Og jeg hadde også stor økning I elastitet og spenst I huden med nesten 20%, og når det kom til rynker så hadde jeg det samme som Monica, kanskje litt mindre, kanskje bare 5% der. Vi veldig fornøyde. Maybrit fortalte også at det kan ta tid å få resultater, og vi ble enige om at en ny scan etter sommeren veldig lurt, sånn at vi venter 12 nye uker før neste scan.
Dette kollagenpulver kan vi virkelig stå inne for, og om du vil teste, så har vi en rabattkode som heter BIOHACKING60. Da får du 60% på din første måned og 30% etter det. Gå inn på osloskinlab.no.
Why don't you explain a bit about the vagus nerve, how it communicates and work with our central nervous system?
Yeah, so the vagus nerve is the nerve that communicates this stress non-stress signal to the body. And it comes from the brainstem. It's the 10th cranial nerve, comes down to, and it connects to all the organs in the body. And so based on how our stress state is, this nerve is communicating to the organs what it should be doing. Should it be shutting down because we're in a life-threatening situation? So we don't care about detoxification or digestion right now. We need to get all the blood to the muscles, dilate the eyes, and prepare ourselves to run or fight off something. Is that what we're telling it to do? Or are we telling the vagus nerve to communicate signals that say, yes, we can, like, you know, wake up the organs, you know, let's detoxify, let's digest, let's calm the heart rate, let's do all these things, you know. What signal are we giving it? You know, there's a reason that people go to the beach and the first thing they do is take off their shoes and they get their feet on the ground and then they walk in the surf and they take their shirt off with their swimsuit on and they're in the sun. You know, like there's a reason that feels good. There's a reason that why people do that for vacation. And it's because that those things are what's giving the vagus nerve to tell the body to increase the rest and digest signal and create more balance there. And so the vagus nerve is very important in doing that. And so lots of times, so the vagus nerve, I mean, I don't know how technical I want to get, but the vagus nerve is divided up into two separate pathways, which is something that in pre-reptiles and even early reptiles was not the case. There was one pathway in this nerve of communication from the brain to the body. And in order for mammals to evolve, we needed two different pathways. Because prior to that, there was this response called a play dead response. If you got too stressed, it would overwhelm the system and you would actually kind of like faint or pass out. And it would really, it would almost shut down organs. And so that was an evolutionarily advantageous, mechanism that happened. And so, but that was in, you know, cold blooded animals. And so in order to be warm blooded, we couldn't afford to have a stress response that would shut down organs because warm-blooded animals are very metabolically active. That's why they're warm-blooded, because they're so metabolically active, it creates heat. And so in order to do that, we had to evolve two pathways in the vagus nerve to prevent the shutdown or this overwhelming of the vagus nerve to create organ shutdown. And so that second pathway evolved when we start seeing more highly evolved reptiles and then eventually mammals, which evolve from reptiles, of which humans are. We are mammals. And so we have this stress response that can happen that doesn't cause the organ shutdown. Now, I don't think evolution was accounting for the very quick change in environment that humans went through, because we have, within a very short evolutionary amount of time, we have removed ourselves from that natural environment, so to speak, and put ourselves in this modern day human created environment, which is quite stressful to us and creates these imbalances in the vagus nerve. And so what can happen is we can get this shutdown of that part of the vagus nerve that prevents the overwhelming of the previously evolved vagus nerve, and we can go into that organ shutdown, which to me sounds very much like a metabolic heart attack, you know, so which I describe in my book. And so that's the type of thing that can happen if over time we inhibit this evolved process that tried to keep us from having that response. So this is something called the polyvagal theory from Dr. Stephen Porges and others. But it's also very relevant in the, I guess, the mental health space, because when we have this imbalance and this split vagus nerve, it can actually lead us to be stuck into this state of depression or anxiety, which is very, very relevant, or stored past traumas, So the work of Dr. Peter Levine, I'm not sure how he says it, is very relevant here. So it's incredibly important, like this aspect of the vagus nerve and learning about the vagus nerve and how it communicates these signals, and then also doing things that create health in the vagus nerve, which are all the things I talked about before, nature exposure and cold therapy and all that kind of stuff. Because we do not want to go to a state where we can get into this mental health crisis, but also a state where we can cause organ shutdown. So it's this aspect of health that not a lot of people talk about, but it's incredibly, incredibly important.
I just recognized in myself when I'm talking negatively to my vagus nerve, at least I'm finding out, you cannot do this, Monica, or you cannot fix this. I'm talking negative to my, how do you chat with it to emphasize the good qualities?
Yeah. So it could just be, I mean, to me, little mantras. That I say to myself, and I've read a lot of books on, you know, self-love and that kind of thing, because we tend to be negative about ourselves because there's so many things in the world that tell us we should be better. We should be something else, and we don't have to be those things. And we're looking at social media, comparing everybody's highlight reel to our life, you know, when in reality, those people that we're looking at on social media, they got bad things in their life too. They're just not posting it all over social media, you know? And so we're comparing ourselves unreasonably to those people, but like, you know, how we talk to ourselves and it's not just how we talk to ourselves and self-love, which is very, very important, but it's how we view the world as well. And so it's right here. I have this little thing that I read a book one time and thought it was very, very good. So I typed out these little things that I say to myself. And I'll just read you a few of them.
Yeah. Oh, great. The mantras.
Just do not struggle for approval, seek control, or have fear. Just know thyself and be, which to me suggests, you know, we're not looking for anyone's approval or trying to have control when we can't, because that's just an out of control thing, or fear anything. Just know yourself. If you know yourself, then you're not scared of what someone thinks of you. And if you know yourself, you're not trying to control the situation. You know yourself and you know you're within your boundaries and you're good. Focus on intention rather than attention. Attention is in the present and intention is for the future. Accept the present, which is hard for a lot of people to do, accept the present as it is and intend for the future. Lots of times people don't accept the present because they're like, if I had just done this, if I had just done that, it's like, well, that's in the past. You can't affect that anymore. So accept the present as it is and intend for making the future better. I don't know. There is something that you can do better than anyone else in the world. Use it to serve humanity. Just different things like that.
Oh,
you know, like
that's beautiful.
Yes.
Those are things that I put it there so that I will stop and read it every now and then. Or if I'm having a rough time or whatever, I stop and read those things. And it reminds me of how I should approach those tough times or something. Incredibly useful for changing your perception of stress and your situation and then helping you tone that vagus nerve.
And very relevant for the heart.
Very relevant. But something else that's really relevant for the heart is supplements and our lifestyle solutions. We have touched on some of it, but do you recommend any supplements like vitamin D, magnesium, anything like that? Or do you take anything?
Yeah, I take a few things. I don't necessarily, you know, blanket recommend supplement or a supplement or anything for everyone. I think magnesium is a very important supplement that we don't get enough of, and it's very important for muscle health and heart health in general. But there are lots of different forms of magnesium, so there could be, you know, different ones specific for individual people that would be best for them. I think that when it comes to supplements, again, that by definition, they are something that should supplement a healthy diet. And if we're not eating a healthy diet and trying to cover it up with supplements, you're missing the boat. You're missing the whole idea. But that being said, you can take supplements to boost certain nutrients. I'm a fan of more whole food supplements, sourced from whole foods. We also have to understand that with supplements, they're synthetically made, a lot of them, and we don't know that they're doing the same thing that they would coming in a whole food. So I think that supplements of whole foods could be useful. Like, you know, if you don't want to eat liver, you could take some freeze-dried liver or powdered liver, you know, and that's just a whole food supplement that you can boost your nutrient content with. For heart health specifically, I think that magnesium is important. I think that you could consider things like carnitine or creatine or taurine or carnosine, which are all things found more heavily in animal foods. And so, I mean, I took carnitine and and taurine and things like that. After I had my heart attack, I was trying to get the, you know, lining of the artery to heal. And as far as I can tell, it has. Those types of things. You could take, specifically for heart health, there's one supplement called wabain or strophanthus that has been shown to increase the parasympathetic or vagus nerve signaling to the heart specifically. And this is something that our body makes itself. The kidney or the adrenal glands make it. We can just give yourself a little more of it and increase that stimulation to the heart via the vagus nerve. I use supplements. I have people, I recommend them to people. It's just on an individual basis, you know. There are a lot of important.
Omega-3 is probably a good one.
Omega-3, it's really about decreasing your omega-6.
Yes.
You know, if you're decreasing your omega-6, you're trying to find the right ratio, yes. Right? So rather than take a bunch of omega-3 to try and balance out the omega-6, I'd rather you just decrease the omega-6, which is the vegetable oils, the unsaturated fats. And then if you're eating a good diet of animal foods, you're getting plenty of omega-3s as long as you're decreasing the amount of omega-6s. That's more important to me, yeah.
In the book, you are talking about beta blocks to raise the HRV. How does that work?
I don't think anybody exactly knows, but it has been shown to increase heart rate variability. When I look at the studies, they don't really have clear explanations. They just notice it. And so they're like, oh, great, we can use it for that too. When in reality, it's probably, have I what?
Have you tried it yourself?
I haven't. I prefer the more, I would say, natural, but that's just a word, you know, the more evolutionarily consistent ways to do it. Doesn't mean that I never would, because I think that's an important thing, is that just because we find something that helps us or heals us doesn't mean it always will. And we have to have the wisdom to change. So yeah.
Coffee good for the heart?
There are some compounds in coffee that are said to be good for the heart, as far as polyphenols and things like that. I think the jury's kind of out on whether or not external antioxidants are as good for us as the ones we make internally. But people always say, oh yeah, you know, I think it's individual. So if someone is drinking coffee, they get a benefit from it, you know, they're not loading it with sugar and other things like that, then it can be beneficial. But I also know some people that the caffeine really affects them. And they're those people that are probably already in that stress state or in that unbalanced stress state. And then the coffee is putting them over the edge and they can actually get arrhythmias and things from it. So you just have to be knowledgeable and kind of be in tune with your body. But I drink coffee and I think that it's fine and beneficial. It's just, you gotta analyze your own situation, you know?
How about alcohol? Is it good or bad for the heart?
Always bad. There seems to be this culture that alcohol is okay in moderation. And, you know, I guess that's true. It depends on what you want out of life. I'm not going to tell anybody to do anything or not do anything. But if you look at it from a health perspective, there's no benefit, zero, to ever consuming alcohol. So
the same with the tobacco, of course.
Yeah, same with drugs, tobacco. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's some evidence the nicotinic receptors, it's beneficial. But that's one small aspect of what's in tobacco. So there's way other beneficial ways to get those benefits than to consume a toxin. Just like if you have social improvement from alcohol, it's like there's much better ways to get that social improvement without the consumption of alcohol, right?
And how about the clean, energized or filtered water?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but you just got to be careful. Like you, if you purify your water, that's great, but it needs to have minerals in it. I would not drink unmineralized water. So I'm a huge fan of mineral waters, buying mineral waters. But if you do filter your water, which is important because there's lots of toxins in water these days, you want to add minerals back to it because that's what's actually going to hydrate you. It's not the water itself. It's the hydrated ions of minerals in the water. So incredibly important to make sure that you're putting minerals back in water.
So just some kind of electrolytes or salt into the water.
Right, exactly.
So how do you make it your own? Do you squeeze lemon and have some salt in it? Or
yeah? No, I filter water I drink mineral water that I buy from the store. And I used to go like actually harvest it from a spring, but I don't do that anymore. But then if I have filtered water, like I have a water filter where I filter the tap water and then I add Redmond Real Salt, Relight back to it. And that's usually if I'm just trying to get electrolytes, I'll just, you know, throw back some of that. If I'd have a, you know, big thing of water, I'll just put it in there and sip it, you know.
That's great. So we are ending this episode soon, but we just wanted to ask you a little bit about workout for the last question here now. How does a good heart-friendly workout routine look like?
Yeah, so the thought would be, or you might go to, oh, it's cardio type, you know, workout, which I don't necessarily agree with. I have nothing wrong with like more endurance type exercise and cardiovascular type exercise, but I don't like the name. I don't like that it's called cardio. It should be called endurance or aerobic exercise. But you really only need like the most 5 miles of that kind of thing. You don't need to run marathons or do endurance racing to be healthy. And there's actually some evidence that can be quite damaging to the heart. And I talk about that in my book. The real heart healthy types of exercise are resistance exercise. You're building muscle, maintaining healthy muscle mass. You could even do a little bit of restraining, like hit workouts, like high intensity level workouts, like short bursts, like burst training or whatever. But you don't necessarily need that either. It is beneficial though. And then I think some type of lengthening exercise is also very important. Pay attention to your connective tissue and lengthen your body, stretch, whether it's yoga or just Pilates or whatever it is, to stretch things out and keep things loose, for sure.
Thank you very much. That was so interesting. And yes, we learned a lot today too.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you for all your knowledge. And it's been an honor to talk to you.
Really.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Yeah.
So we can find you on Instagram. That's Dr. Stephen Hussey.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Stephen Hussey.
Dr. Stephen Hussey. And then you have your YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's Resource Your Health.
Yeah, and you have your homepage where you have the coaching stuff.
Yeah, that's
as well.
resourceyourhealth.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we will put all your addresses under here so people can find
Perfect.
You.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, be well and have a great rest of the week. And hope we talk to you soon again.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Da var vi ferdig med andre del med Dr. Stephen Hussey også. Nå har vi fått en virkelig innkjøring i dette med hjertet. Del 2 var jo mer om livsstil, særlig dette med stress. Jeg går og tenker på alle som går rundt med stress kontinuerlig og egentlig ikke vet det.
Ja, og hvilken effekt tankene har på oss, at du får en like stor stressrespons i kroppen når du sier noe negativt til deg selv, og dette med vagusnerven og I tilbake til det evinnelige tema rundt HRV. Det var så mye spennende å lære I dag. Og så legger vi show notes under, ikke sant?
Det gjør vi. Vi legger alle adressene til Dr. Stephen Hussey, hvordan du kan finne han, og hvis du vil jobbe med han, så driver han også med coaching. Vi skal legge alt dette I show notesene.
Da håper vi at dere får en fin uke videre, og happy biohacking!
Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon med dele kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.
Julas tilbud hos Spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydret tynnribber fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alt I tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.